So the book of Joshua, page 291. All right, let's read. Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. I have a tape recording here made in England a few years ago, and the title of it is, Moses, my servant, is dead. You know, there's quite a bit in that when you start to look at it. Moses had been the servant of the Lord for 40 years. And so the Lord says, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. And notice he says, go over this Jordan. Now, we might anticipate just a little bit here. We'll run into it after a while, but they have come to the Jordan when it's running at its highest, when there's been plenty of rain and melting snows and the mountains way up above. And so it is running like a flood, and they're to go over it. And they don't have any boats. Well, we're anticipating. But I wanted you to get the picture. Because if God is going to perform a miracle, he's going to make it a real one. Now, there are times when a person can wade across the Jordan in some places and hardly get to the knees. But that's in the dry season. And when it gets to rushing along, why, there's a great deal of water going down that river, even though it's swift, and because of the great fall it has. There's a lot of fall from Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea. I know I used to live in a place where there was a river that you could hear roaring several blocks away uptown, and it had an average of 80 feet to the mile fall. There wasn't any dirt in the bottom of that river, just all boulders. The dirt had all been washed away. And because it just boulders left, they called it Boulder River. Well, the Jordan has boulders in it too, as we'll see in this story, and so that's the reason why I'm introducing that. But I suspect there was some dirt in it too. Verse 3, every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. All you have to do is get out and walk. And wherever you walk, that's yours. Well, there's an old story, you know, about a man was given all the land that he could walk around in a day. And he was very, very greedy, as many of us are. And he tried to walk around as much as he possibly could. And he went a little too far to make his first corner. And then he stepped on and made another corner and finally made a third corner. And then he began to see that to get back to his starting place, he's really going to have to go. And so as the sun was setting, and that was the sign, as the sun was setting, he had to break into a run to make it. He made it, but he fell over dead. Well, that's an old story. Shows how greedy a person can be and lose his life for it. Well, now, again, seeing here that these people are, wherever they put their feet, it belongs to them. I wonder why they didn't get together and just take that whole thing. They didn't. They never did. You'd think they'd have done something about it. Well, the giants were there, and they were a little, and these people were kind of faint-hearted at times, and their faith just wasn't too good, like you and I. So I guess maybe that explains it. Verse 4, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, that's on the east side of the Jordan, from the wilderness, that is, from the wilderness on the south, and this Lebanon on the east, under the great river, the river Euphrates, on the north, at the, all the land of the Hittites, and under the great sea, the Mediterranean, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. Or coast there is your boundary line. Now this doesn't include quite all that had been promised to Abraham to start with, but this includes a lot. Both sides of the Jordan, clear up to the Euphrates, north of Palestine, as we call it, and down to the wilderness that they had come through. Now, when we look at the fuller explanation and what they will inherit someday, it goes clear to the Nile in Egypt. That includes all of the wilderness and the Sinaitic Peninsula, and also clear east to the Tigris-Euphrates River, where they originate below Babylon. And that's going to take in a lot of territory. Five, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. How many times you've heard that promised? But remember, this was promised to Joshua. It wasn't promised to anybody else. Of course, now, if we are the servant of the Lord, as Joshua was, and obedient as he was, well, then, of course, we could probably feel pretty well assured that we might have the same looking after us. But there are some ifs with this. Verse 6, be strong and of a good courage. There you are. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, repeating again, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. Now you notice all of this being with him and not forsaking him is dependent upon his having good courage, strong and having good courage, being very courageous. Now further instruction in verse 8. This book of the law, which Moses had written, of course, shall not depart out of thy mouth, be quoting it all the time, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. All right, and that day then, observing the law, knowing it and observing it, could bring prosperity and could bring good success in any undertaking he was doing. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Well, that's about the third time. Be not afraid. Fear is a terrible thing. It'll defeat you. Neither be thou dismayed. And that's saying the same thing again. This is Hebrew poetry. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. It's saying the same thing in different words. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Well, there's 9 verses now that we've covered, divided into 4 and 5. that are worth thinking about. Now, of course, what Joshua had, the book of the law, was only these five books we've just been running through here, Genesis to Deuteronomy. And that was the law. That was the instructions for Israel. Had all they needed. Any other things that were added after that was because of their failures. If they hadn't failed, it wouldn't need it any more than that. Wouldn't needed all these prophets when the kings forsook the Lord. All these prophetical books in the Bible wouldn't have needed those. Israel had been obedient. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host, and command the people, saying, prepare ye victuals. We'd say victuals, wouldn't we? For within 3 days, ye shall pass over this Jordan. Well, let's see, he said something about that up here to start, didn't he? This Jordan. Yeah, in verse 2. Go over this Jordan. And here it is. Going over the Jordan again. To go in to possess the land, which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it. And to the Reubenites, and to the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, spake Joshua, saying, I remember these are the folks who had taken an inheritance on the east side of the Jordan. And so now, they had made a bargain that they would go over and help the other folks to take the land, and then they'd come back and dwell on the land that they had on the east side. So, Joshua says to them, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord your God hath given you rest, and hath given you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side Jordan. But ye shall pass before your brethren, armed all the mighty men of valor, and help them. Until the Lord have given your brethren rest, as he hath given you, and they also have possessed a land which the Lord your God giveth them. Then ye shall return unto the land of your possession, and enjoy it, which Moses the Lord's servant gave you on this side Jordan, toward the sun rising. Now we have two directions given to us. The sun rising and the sun setting. The Mediterranean, be it the sun setting and the sun rising on the east side of the Jordan. And they answered Joshua, saying, all that thou hast commanded us, all that thou commandest us, we will do. And whithersoever thou sendest us, we will go. According as we hearkened unto Moses in all things, so will we hearken unto thee. Only the Lord thy God be with thee, as he was with Moses. Well, they spoke very nicely, didn't they? They respect Joshua, and pray that the Lord will be with him as he was with Moses. And they go on to say, whosoever he be that doth rebel against thy commandment, and will not hearken unto thy words in all that thou commandest him, he shall be put to death. And they say to Joshua, only be strong and of good courage. The Lord told him three times, and they tell him once. I think that'd begin to sink in after a while, wouldn't it? Be strong and of good courage. Well, that ends chapter 1 of Joshua. And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out Shittim, two men, to spy secretly, saying, go view the land, even Jericho. Now, this sent here is had sent, so probably that anticipates some of the things we said here just before. Now, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any criticism of Joshua for sending these spies. Now, when the 10 spies were sent to Kadesh Barnea some 38 years before, there is some doubt as to whether the proper thing was done. That is, shouldn't they have gone into the land and taken it without stopping to spy it out and so on? If God would lead them and give the land to them, why not just go ahead? So I'm not too sure here about this spy business. It came out all right here, seems it. In fact, there's quite a story hinged onto this as you go on through the Bible. It had far-reaching effects, sending these two spies. And they went and came into an harlot's house named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, Behold, there came men in hither tonight of the children of Israel to search out the country. So somebody spotted them and recognized them as being of Israel. And what's the king going to do? And the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab, saying, Bring forth the men that are come to thee, which are entered into thine house, for they be come to search out all the country. Now we have another question coming up. Did Rahab do the right thing? You see, we kind of have to question these things sometimes. There are some people that don't believe that you should tell a lie under any circumstances, whatever. No difference what depends on it. Well, it kind of depends upon what kind of folks you're dealing with to start with. And it depends also on whether somebody's life might be at stake or some great ideal or something of the kind. Now, this one seemed to come out all right. And the woman took the two men and hid them and said thus, There came men unto me, but I wist not whence they were. And it came to pass about the time of shutting of the gate, that is the city gate, when it was dark, that the men went out. Whither the men went, I wot not, or I don't know. Pursue them quickly, or you shall overtake them. Now she's telling the king what to do. And I imagine he obeyed her. It sounds like it. Just think, a harlot living on the city wall dictates to the king, and he does what she tells him to do. But she had brought them up to the roof of the house and hid them with the stalks of flax which she had laid in order upon the roof. So they're hidden under stalks of flax on the roof. Now, kind of imagine this a little bit. This city, Jericho, had two walls, an outer wall and an inner wall, with just not too much of a space between, just a few feet. And according to the way this tells the story, that her house was built on top of the outer wall, which meant that they had to have steps to go up over the inner wall and then down to her house. And keep that in mind, as it'll explain some things later on. And the men pursued after them the way to Jordan, under the fords, the way which they had supposed they'd come, and which they did. And as soon as they which pursued after them were gone out, they shut the gate. And before they were laid down, she came up unto them upon the roof. And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. Now she says, I know all of this. It had been common knowledge for a long time, for 40 years, part of it. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you, 40 years before, when you came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites, just recently, that were on the other side of Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts did melt. Now that's a figure of speech. They just didn't have any courage left in them. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord, your God, He is God in heaven above, in earth beneath. Now, therefore, I just have to stop here. She recognizes this Lord, or Jehovah of Israel, even uses the name. Now, you wouldn't think of heathen ordinarily doing that, would you? She does. Now, she recognizes things, and she believes. She has learned, just from what she had heard, what it took Nebuchadnezzar a long, long time to learn. He had to have about 3 experiences. A couple of dreams, or one dream at least, and another experience, and then finally just had to go out and eat grass for 7 years in the fields before he could learn what this woman here learned and believed. Now, that might be right. Maybe she didn't have so much to unlearn. Well, she didn't have a position to maintain either. She wasn't a king or something like that. But notice she says, for the Lord, your God, He is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. And they didn't think of their gods as being quite that far-reaching. Now, therefore, I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that you will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token, and that ye will save alive my father and my mother and my brethren and my sisters and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. And the men answered her, our life for yours, if ye utter not this our business. And it shall be, when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with thee. Now, we don't know that they had any message from the Lord to make this bargain with her. But under the circumstances, what else could they do? If they didn't, she could turn them in, couldn't she? Yes. Well, the thing is working out all right. Because she knew very well that these people were going to take the city and kill the inhabitants. She knew that. That had happened to Sihon and Og on the other side of the Jordan. So she knows very well it's going to happen here. Then she let them down by a cord. Now, that's not a cord as we would think. You don't let a man down on a cord as we think of it. This is a rope. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was upon the town wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. So no doubt her house overhung off of the wall, and be very easy to just let them out of the window. Of course, she'd have to wind a rope a half hitch around her chair leg, you know, so she could hold it. Or did she have some of her family helping? Now, you see, we don't know about that either. But it just seems that she was alone in this deal here. She wouldn't take any chances of telling the rest of her family about it. See, we have to use our imagination a little bit, if we can. See about this. Now, I can give you another little hint here, too. Evidently, she lived on the side of the town away from the Jordan River, on the west side of town, on the wall. And so that was toward the mountains, and not toward the river and the fords. That gets into the picture too. And she said unto them, get ye to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you. In other words, don't go back to the Jordan, or they'll come in back and meet you. Well, she has a lot of good sense, hasn't she? Tells the king what to do and tells these men what to do. She's bossy. Well, she knows the situation. And it's a good idea to listen to folks who know, even if it's a woman. So they say, she says, go to the mountain and hide yourselves there 3 days until the pursuers be returned, and after may you go your way. She knows just how it's going to turn out. And the men said unto her, we will be blameless of this thine oath which thou hast made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line this time stood a cord, a rope, a scarlet thread, in the window which thou didst let us down by. And thou shalt bring thy father, and thy mother, and thy brethren, and all thy sister's household home unto thee. Now this indicates that she was living alone. Like a lot of gals today, she probably had an apartment. And so they instruct her to bring them all to her house. Her father, and mother, and brothers, and sisters. And her belongings. And then put this scarlet rope in the window for a token. That when Israel then would take the city, they'd see that, they know. Now I might anticipate again a little bit. In digging up the ruins of Jericho and finding the particular strata of Jericho in which this occurred, the indications are that it was an earthquake which destroyed the city, and that it came from the east and waved toward the west. And of course, earthquakes, they land waves sometimes just like the ocean does. And the west side of the city wasn't as badly damaged as was the east side. And so a portion of the wall was left standing with her house on it. The rest of the wall went flat. Now, another thing that makes me think of this is because in the Psalms, in a description of this falling of the walls and so on, it said the hills skipped like lambs. Well, again, that's a rolling motion, you see, of an earthquake. So we put all of these expressions together, we can begin to get a picture of it. In fact, we can just about draw a picture after we get all of these facts put together, of the directions and so on. And it shall be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will not be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood will not be on our head, or shall be on his head, if any hand be upon him. So say, got to stay indoors. And if thou utter this our business, that if you tattle, then we will be quit, that is, we will be released of thine oath which thou hast made us to swear. And she said, according to your words, so be it. She agreed. And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet line or rope in the window. And they went and came into the mountain and abode there 3 days until the pursuers were returned. Now, I did know the name of this mountain, but quite some time ago, I've forgotten it. I might look that up again. Because I think it has some other history. I remember right. So they stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had returned from down to Jordan, searching all around down there to find them. And the pursuers sought them throughout all the way, but found them not. So the two men returned and descended from the mountain and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun. That is, passed over the Jordan and came to Joshua the son of Nun and told him all things that befell them. And they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. That was important news that they brought. But the enemy is scared stiff, and of course that's half the battle, isn't it? Now, we have a little note in the margin of our companion Bible that this is about the fifth or sixth of the month of Abib. Now, Abib is the same as the month Nisan in the first part of the wanderings of Israel. They were to have their Passover in the middle or 14th of Nisan, but that same thing as Abib, which is named later. So this is just a little while before the Passover, and that would make it right around the first part of April. First couple of weeks of April. And that would be when the waters in the Jordan were high. Of chapter 3. And Joshua rose early in the morning. Now let's see. We're getting back here. 1:2. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all thy people, and the land which I do give thee, even to the children of Israel. Alright, now he hasn't forgotten that. The spies had come and had gone and come back again. And so, probably here, we have this chapter 3 just following up what we have there in chapter 1. The spies, in the meantime, made their trip and come back. Now, you may have to read pretty close to get that. I'm just suggesting that. So, Joshua got up early in the morning, and they, that is, all Israel, removed from Shittim, and came to Jordan, he and all the children of Israel, and lodged there. I was encamped there before they passed over. And it came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host. Remember that Joshua had appointed officers as Moses had. And they commanded the people, saying, when ye see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then ye shall remove from your place and go after it. Yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits by measure. Now, how close were they to get to it? 2,000 cubits. Well, the note suggests about a mile and a half. In other words, a host of Israel are not to come within a mile and a half of that ark, as it was progressing and went across the Jordan River. And that means, as I said some time back in one of our lessons, we mentioned some of these things, that crossing of the Jordan may have been a space of close to 12 miles, the whole crossing. In other words, Israel camped along there and went forward and went across. And it'd have to be a 3-mile gap in between the two groups going across, where the ark was in the midst, because it'd be a mile and a half above and a mile and a half below what they would have to stay from it. So take 3 from 12 and make about 9 miles of actual crossing then left for them. Oh, no. It'd take them forever to get across. No, when the signal was given, they just went every man ahead and went across. Now, that 12 miles is just about the distance you have of the east side of Jordan joining Judah on the other side of the Jordan, if you look at your map. Just about that space. See, we talked about this somewhat when we were talking about them crossing the Red Sea. They didn't go across that 2x2 either. I think folks got this all mixed up, you know. It was 2x2 that the animals went into the ark. Not Israel across the Red Sea or across the Jordan. Well, we'll make that rather emphatic. So people remember it. And Joshua said unto the people, sanctify yourselves. Clean up. Put on your Sunday meeting clothes. Or is there more to it than just their clothing? Be in the right attitude of mind, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And Joshua spake unto the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass over before the people. And they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. Bringing out a little here, something here that is a good psychological thing too. You can't have a people or an army working together and having much success unless they have a great deal of respect for their leader. That just doesn't work. And a country doesn't get along too well if the people don't have respect for its president, king, or what have you. And thou shalt command the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you are come to the brink of the water of Jordan, ye shall stand still in Jordan. And we'd think somewhere toward the middle of it, center of it. Hey, stop, stand still. And Joshua said unto the children of Israel, come hither, and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, hereby ye shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will, without fail, drive out from before you the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Hivites, and the Perizzites, and the Girgashites, and the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth passed over before you into Jordan. Now therefore take you 12 men out of the tribes of Israel, out of every tribe of man. And here's something else too. That ark stayed there in the midst of Jordan until all the people got across. And then the ark went on. That has something to do with the drying up of the river too. Well, we didn't say about the river being dry, did we? We said it was a full flow here in the spring, getting Passover time. And that's a harvest time, you see. The first harvest is around that time. Well, we'll get more of that, maybe. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon a heap. So something held the waters. I think God stuck his hand out and held the waters back until they all piled way up high up Jordan. And you know how far up, what town up there that they were piled up at? This is rather significant. Adam, right. A town by the name of Adam. The waters of Jordan, which sometimes spoken of as the waters of death, were stopped. Well, as people went across. Now you preach a sermon on that, get some significance out of it. We won't have time here. And it came to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the ark of the covenant before the people, and as they that bear the ark were coming to Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest. Now there we have the word, you see. So it's overflowed. Lowlands are all underwater. That the waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon an heap very far from the city Adam, which is beside Zarethan. And those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off. And the people passed over right against Jericho. And you understand almost in the middle of that section I was speaking about. And the priests that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And all the Israelites, while they were standing firm there, all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. Clean over. That's a little expression I used to hear when I was a youngster from some of my folks that came from the hills. Don't hear it used very often anymore. Now here we have a picture. As we put it all together, we have more. But the priests marched right up to the bank of the Jordan as if they were going to walk right into it. And when their feet touched the water was gone. And so they marched right into the center of the riverbed, and stood there with the ark. And all the people went across. And then the priest took the ark on. It was out last. Went in first, came out last. The ark of the covenant, God's promise to his people Israel. Well, they could pass over pretty fast. I don't know how long. Of course, that water is piling up there all the time, too. But if they did go across in a stretch, let's say around 9 miles, why, 3 million people could get over there pretty fast, I imagine. And, of course, they had their flocks and herds, too. Well, now that takes us down to chapter 4. Now, we're getting them just about across, aren't we? All right, we'll stop there for this time. All right, we're ready to start on our second section of our evening's studies. And this time, I think we will turn to the second chapter of Philippians. Philippians 2. Actually, we're meaning to cover particularly verses 1 to 5.